What's going on, everybody? NHL Fantasy on Ice, mailbag / Nick Alberga edition. We got Nick Alberga coming on from Sportsnet. Also, Robbie Reese, as usual. What's up, guys?
What's up, everybody? Nick, Happy New Year. Welcome back to the show.
Boys, Happy New Year. It's fantastic to be talking hockey again. I'm really disappointed that there's no more Kula background for Rob Reese. I missed that. What was it, a library?
It was a library, then it was a beach, and now we're on YouTube, so I had to cut that.
Oh, wow.
The producer, Bobby, was like, Rob, clean it up. So
he cleaned it up.
He
had to clean it up. And Nick, did you know you're on YouTube with this beard you got going and the hat? You know that millions are going to see you. Millions of people are going to see you.
Yeah, people know. I'm not known for my looks, I'll tell you that. So we're good, boys.
Nah, you look sharp. Thanks for joining. I know you said we wouldn't talk to you until February, but thanks for coming on. I know it's January.
I got all the time in the world for you guys, boys.
So I'm going to lay out. Fire away, boys.
Yeah, appreciate it as always. You can find Nick's Sportsnet draft kit and top 250 rankings. Definitely encourage you to compare them to ours at nhl.com/fantasy. See some discrepancies here and there, and then make your decisions based off whatever your gut is. That's what we always encourage. But yeah, we have the same top three, different order. You got McDavid over MacKinnon. I'll give you the floor to explain why. We're not going to keep encouraging people to take MacKinnon. We've done that a million times on the show, but give us a reason why you have McDavid over MacKinnon.
Yeah, I always like to preface this conversation because people always come at me on social media. Everything's subjective to personal preference, right? I love your list, you love mine, whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, you're drafting your own team as a fantasy owner and you'll make the best selection possible. You know, the way I see it, at least for Connor McDavid being my number one guy, I just think he has the highest ceiling, will forever have the highest ceiling. He's the best player for my money in the NHL right now. And that alone, nothing against Nathan MacKinnon. I actually have MacKinnon win the Hart Trophy this season. I would just lose sleep passing on Connor McDavid. That's pretty much it, guys.
I feel that. I mean, especially with Edmonton too, and just how electric they can be. Like, they're going to just torch the North Division. I think they're going to light it up every night there. Three or four goals guaranteed.
They'll be lit up too, though, right?
That's the thing. That's how they have to play, right? With their goalies. And I've been chirped personally for saying that Edmonton doesn't have goalies. I mean, Koskinen played okay last year at a 9.15 or above, but like, he had horrible stretches too. So I'm like, how is that bad that I say they don't have goalies? They don't. They should have addressed that.
Yeah, you're right. And part of my fantasy hockey draft kit, I looked more in-depthly at this North Division and the All-Canadian Division, and I ranked the goaltending tandems. I actually don't have Ottawa number 7, if you know what I'm saying. I have the Edmonton Oilers. It's nothing against Mikko Koskinen, and I guess dissimilar to last year, it sounds like he's the number one, at least going into this season. But from a fantasy perspective, guys, I have zero faith, absolutely zero faith in Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. I have actually more faith in Matt Murray and Marcus Hogberg with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and Nielsen's actually on long-term IR, and he's on with the Lightning now, so he's not even the backup anymore. And so that's a lot that you're saying, that Edmonton's goaltending is that bad. And I would say it's something against Smith and Koskinen. I mean, nothing personal, but they're just not – very good. They're not even like average goaltenders in the league. So that's the bottom line. I think for Edmonton, I wonder, like, Nick, you know, it's going to be a tight, no matter who you have winning the North Division, it's going to be tight. So do you expect Edmonton to make the playoffs? I have them out. I don't know about you, Robbie, but I have them out. I know they're going to have a lot of scoring, but they have some holes, no Klefbom. You're going to depend that much on Tyson Barrie defensively. You might be disappointed, you know?
Yeah, they made like some pretty decent adds, I felt. But again, I think because goaltending is just so important in this day and age, especially in this type of stack when it comes to the new NHL for at least this season, the goaltending is going to be huge. Dave Tippett is a big X factor for me. I know he tried his best to instill his type of system, the one we saw so much success with the Phoenix Coyotes, now Arizona Coyotes. But I just don't know if they still don't have the personnel on this roster to play that brand, that style. Like, the offense will be easy, but I think you look around that North Division, I have a very difficult time including the Edmonton Oilers in my playoff conversation. From a fantasy perspective, I expect pretty much the same from McDavid, pretty much the same from Drysdale. Contract here, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I'm all over that file. I love where you guys have placed Tyson Barrie. I think he's going to be huge for the number one ranked power play in the league to headman things, some residuals happening there. Kyler Yamamoto, I think there's a bit of appeal to Dominic Cahoon. Like, there's fantasy value to be found in Edmonton, but I think from a perspective of trying to make the playoffs, guys, I don't know, because I think Montreal is much improved. Again, goaltending is huge with Carey Price and Jake Allen in that tandem. I think the Maple Leafs will be involved in that conversation. And I like that Calgary, we think, has solidified their crease for the first time since Mika Kiprusoff. So right away, you pick four teams right there. And then I think Edmonton will likely be in a conversation with a team like the Winnipeg Jets here, guys.
Well, Calgary did what Edmonton should have done. They went out, exactly, ponied up the money, got the guy, and now we're not talking about it. We all like Calgary to make the playoffs here. We're not concerned about them. In fact, I think they could challenge Toronto, mm-hmm, to win the North Division. Now, I do think Edmonton will make it. It would be foolish of me to say that they are a lock because of the concerns that both Pete and Nick addressed, but I do think that this team, first-ranked power play last year, second-ranked penalty kill, that is a winning recipe every year to make the playoffs. If you're top five, even top 10 in either of those categories, I think it's a Stan Bowman formula, actually. He said, if you have a team that has top 10 in either of those units, you are making the playoffs. So I do think that they will make the playoffs. I do think it'll be close. They're going to have to rely on McDavid and Draisaitl heavily. And if there's any injury concern for either of those players, they are not going to be sniffing the playoffs this year. But I do think they've got a better shot over the Winnipeg Jets, who I think Connor Hellebuck just bailed them out one too many times, yep, last season. So I'd have them out. I'd have Montreal and Edmonton in.
Yeah, I think it's a recency bias with both of those teams, right? We didn't like what we saw from the Jets. I think they have a little bit more of an excuse because, yep, they had no Laine, no Scheifele because of the injuries in that first round series qualifier against the Flames. But on the other side, what's the excuse for what happened to Edmonton against a flawed Chicago Blackhawks team in the qualifiers, in the bubble? So that's just something that's fresh on my mind that I didn't really like what I saw. And then I think, yeah, you mentioned Barry, and you know, there's Yamamoto too, Puljujarvi, Dominic Cahoon. There's a lot of value on the Edmonton Oilers to tap into those highly ranked players in McDavid and Draisaitl.
Hey, no one was more disappointed with what the Oilers put forth in the bubble, but I also don't think you can judge teams, you know, with what happened in the bubble. It's very difficult to mark them and say this is who they are based on whatever happened in that Edmonton bubble or Toronto bubble. Very difficult to judge teams on that short sample size and under those circumstances. No, Nick?
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. I think we're seeing it to an extent in the NBA too, right? Like, I think these are just weird times. They're crazy times. You know, I joked with you guys off air before coming on. I did one of my drafts last night on Thursday night, and I drafted five goalies. And in a normal season, that would be sort of a joke, but I don't think it is this time around, especially with, you know, the news that we've been hearing the last couple of days that, you know, COVID is a prevalent issue around this league, around this world right now, and will continue to be. So I think you throw anything that you subscribe to fantasy wise, guys, for your entirety of your career as a fantasy owner, you throw it out the door this year. I mean, it's just going to be so bizarre and so odd and so unusual, guys.
Well, and I think depth this year is going to be more imperative than ever, even in fantasy hockey. Like, having depth at goalie is going to be huge. Having depth at wing is going to be huge. Those scarce positions that are not readily available. One team that I think does not have depth this year is the Chicago Blackhawks. They've been decimated already by preseason injuries. Nick, I know you have Patrick Kane at number 9. Pete and I just moved him down to 15th. We still love his position. We still think he's going to be a point per game or better player, no doubt about that. But Chicago, I've been reading other articles from different outlets. A lot of people are picking them to be the last place team in the NHL this season. How do you feel about taking a guy like Pat Kane now in the first round of fantasy?
Your concerns are fair. You know, I totally comprehend that and get that. I think when I look at the body of work of Patrick Kane, to me, he's just under a marquee group of players that he can do it with whoever he plays with. I think it's fair that, you know, he'll lose a couple points here and there. I think ultimately in that top six in Chicago, like, I really like Alex DeBrincat in a bounce back year. They're going to need a lot out of Dylan Strome, Carl Soderberg. I mean, the list goes on and on because they've really been stripped of their depth. Of course, with the news of Jonathan Toews not starting the season, Kirby Dach banged up for quite a bit of time. So they're going to need Patty Kane to really, really step up. And I quite honestly think Patty Kane relishes this type of role as being sort of the underdog. I think a lot of people are going to sleep on Chicago, much similar to what we saw you know, in the bubble. Clearly, I think they are going to be a cellar dweller, quite frankly. You look at that division, number one and number two, their goaltending situation. Like, they can't be serious about, and they're not serious about competing anyways. They put out a damn list, they put out, you know, a letter to their fans. Like, they're quite content, at least to me. It seems like they'd like a really nice draft pick here, maybe be in the hunt for Owen Power and be cool with it. But I think they're going to be a competitive bunch more than we think.
I wanted to mention in this show, whether you're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks and players like Kane and DeBrincat, maybe even Dylan Strome in late rounds, they also have an intriguing prospect, Pius Suter, mm-hmm. who's playing center and maybe could factor into the top six. Because if you're talking about Carl Soderberg being in the top six, this kid very well could end up fitting into that high of a point in the lineup. But I wanted to mention about some of the points only leagues and how some of these bad teams gain a lot of value. Like, we're really low in our rankings on like Anthony Mantha and Dylan Larkin and players like that. Yeah. And some guys from Ottawa, obviously, naturally, that they're probably going to be in the seventh spot in that North division. But if you're talking about points only league, there are a lot of guys out there, right, guys, that you can really target and not worry about the plus minus. That's what's the good thing about that format.
Yeah, lots of juice to squeeze, no doubt about it. In my draft last night, not to go back to it, I got Anthony Mantha, Tyler Bertuzzi was taken. You know, even I think Philip Hronek, somebody took a huge, quick, late flyer on him. I get it. Like, you want point production. I think what we always preach, all of us here in this conversation, is extracting the most value possible. And I think certainly in points-only leagues, like, you have to take that flyer, because at the end of the day, I always think somebody has to score, right? I thought about this way back when I played and my team was stinky. Somebody has to score. The offense will provide itself. And I like those. Like, even a guy like Mantha, it's sneaky value, guys. Like, off the top of my head, and I believe I'm factual on this, I think he played 43 games last year and had 38 points. If you're hovering at a point per game, I don't care which team you're on, you're going to be on my fantasy roster.
There's definitely value there, Nick. And I think another one that we're looking at now is the Buffalo Sabres. They're probably not in this basement dweller conversation anymore with the addition of Taylor Hall. They're probably a little bit closer to competing this year for the playoffs. You've got Taylor Hall at 12th, which I love. I love the boldness there. We've got him down at 48th. So we think it's going to go top 50 in most leagues. But do you believe that him being reunited with Ralph Kruger or you know, just playing with Jack Eichel, like how strong do you feel about his ceiling this year in Taylor Hall?
Well, obviously very strong, right? I took him in the draft yesterday and I got him late. I got him in the fourth round. I was quite happy with it. I actually had I had the 13th overall in a 14 league. So the snake and round three and four, I got Barkov and Hall. So I was through the moon, through the roof with that. I just think for a variety of reasons, Taylor Hall is going to be much similar. I don't want to say to the Hart Trophy guy a couple of years back, but I think the value will be there with this pick. His attachment to Jack Eichel, you know, much similar to what we just talked about, the recency bias. We haven't seen the Buffalo Sabres in quite a bit of time. We do remember Jack Eichel has been sniffing around that Hart conversation the last couple of years. Thought he was exceptional last year. So you attach a Taylor Hall to this lineup, a guy who's got some pedigree, some, you know, clout in this league. He won the Hart Trophy. I think they're bound to go off. I think automatically it boosts the value, you know, top six wise in Buffalo for sure. I love Rasmus Dahlin in a contract year in the back end. I think he's poised for a breakout, but I just think you look at Taylor Hall, you can make an argument that this is the best line he could be on in his career, at least in the NHL. And I'm willing to take that value where I find it, especially in round four, but even higher because I love the attachment that he has. So not only Taylor Hall, but that power play, like Rasmus Dahlin is a guy people will get more and more familiar with that has the high pedigree. And I think he could break out. Victor Olofsson's a wild card, as we all know, in terms of point production and offense, you know, Eric Staal's in a contract here. I think there's a lot of value in Buffalo. And again, it's all subjective, guys, not to be too long winded with this answer. It's all subjective to people, how they truly feel about the Buffalo Sabres. But let's not forget, every year people put out their predictions and their rankings, and while they think they have it, more times than not, we are incorrect. And there's always that one or two teams that gets in there when you least expect it. And I think it's sort of the running joke now that Buffalo is going to miss the playoffs, but why not this year, right?
Yeah, especially in a 56-game season. I mean, on paper, that East division looks daunting for sure, but look at the injuries that and the replacements that the Boston Bruins need to make. There's a lot of turnover for some of these other teams as well. I don't know that like a team like the Islanders or the Flyers maybe did enough in the offseason. Maybe the Islanders did because they have Sorokin coming in, but either of those teams could miss the playoffs. If you see the Rangers have some flaws on defense, all of a sudden Buffalo could creep in the fourth spot. It wouldn't shock any of us because we know they're improved. We know they have a more filled in lineup. And in terms of filling in the lineup, Nick, like my big question for them is who's going to play on the right side of Hall and Eichel? We see in training camp today, it's Tage Thompson. That's a little polarizing. Obviously you expect maybe Olofsson, maybe Sam Reinhart, who's been a staple there on the right side in recent years. Also Dylan Cousins from the World Juniors. And I think maybe if he makes camp and makes the roster, there could be a case for him to shift to wing and play a little top six action. Who do you like the best out of those couple of guys for a late round fantasy guy?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Victor Olofsson. I just had that suspicion, but don't discount as well, like Sam Reinhart, right? Because he's got the chemistry and he's played a lot with Jack Eichel in the past. And, you know, I think a lot of people in general, I'm sure you guys get the same questions on social media. You know, how much stock do you put into line deployment and line utilization? I think on a daily basis in practice, shift by shift, lines change all the time. And while, you know, the mass hysteria in Toronto right now is, oh my goodness, Joe Thornton, 41 years of age with Marner and Austin Matthews on that top line, that might not stick for one period, one shift. Like, things change so quickly, at least, especially in this day and age in the NHL, that you could see a variety of different combos. So I think you have to think outside the box. And I love the names you brought to the conversation. I just think you got to think about that as a fantasy owner, especially in DFS, right? You've got to stay on top of line assignments. That's the biggest piece of advice I can give the fantasy owners listening right now, is just stay on top of who's playing with who. So I think you can find significant value out there.
Well, let's go back to the East Division here and talk about goaltending, because goaltending in that division, that is the future of goaltending in the National Hockey League. There's no question about that. We did get a fan question on Twitter. Now, this one to me is a no-brainer, but I will throw it out there. I am in a 10-team keeper league. Which goalie do you like better long-term, Tristan Jarry or Ilya Samsonov?
Do I go first?
Yeah, it seems to me. If you go Jarry, my jaw is going to strike the floor here.
You're going
to
be jarred. I go Jarry. No, it's Samsonov, guys, right? And my wonder too, like, I'm just trying to temper my expectations with all three of these Russian goalies. It's really, really hard. And the ones I'm talking about, of course, Sorokin in his rookie season, Samsonov, and Igor Shesterkin. I think when you look at Washington, my worry was, even with Henrik Lundqvist, is the stability, the installation. You know, Braden Holtby meant more than we thought to that organization, and we'll see that at the forefront, especially in this condensed schedule, the baseball style back-to-backs, the buffer zones in the schedule. They you know, are super confident, we know, in Samsonov, but you guys crunched the numbers. He didn't play in the bubble. I don't think his last game was March 5th. Like, it's going to be a long, long time between starts, especially with no training camp games here. And I just think, you know, it's lofty expectations for a guy who's what made 26 NHL appearances. I think he's going to go through his ups. He's going to go through his downs, and it's going to be that type of year for Washington. I would not be stunned. We were just having the conversation. Everybody expect Washington to be a juggernaut. I would not be shocked at all if that's one of the teams that struggle this season. That's just the way I feel, but I think they better hope that they're going to get some quality backup net mining here from Craig Anderson.
And Nick, I know you're a contract year guy, and you look across the list, you see the two Bruins goalies are potential 2021 UFAs with Rask and Halak. You have all of those other guys are RFAs after this year. Of course, the one-year entry-level deal for Sorokin.
Yes.
Shesterkin is in the contract year, still rookie eligible. Carter Hart is as well. So you have a tough time seeing the Flyers miss the playoffs unless he's a one-man show and they just don't support him, which I think is a potential scenario, even though we expect Hart to be in the Vezina conversation. And then Sammy as well from the Capitals is in that 2021 RFA consideration. So really, you can't break any ties from this because everybody's in the same boat. Everybody has the urgency, and everybody is at risk of missing the playoffs if they're not up to snuff.
Yeah, and I think following up on you know, and piggybacking off that, I think when you look at the fan question, and appreciate the question, Pittsburgh is just a lot of what ifs for me, guys. Like, I'm always questioning what in the world Jim Rutherford is doing, but you can't argue with his success, if I can say it. Hall of Famer. I mean, he's won multiple cups, but some of the, like, even, you know, the deal the other day, I was like, what is going on? Like, John Marino, I've got nothing against John Marino, but he played 1 year in the league, got a nice, healthy extension. I get that. But even when you look at this Pens roster, while it looks great on paper, came into the bubble and did absolutely squat, right? I love their top six. We talked about this almost ad nauseum entering bubble play, and well, they were not good at all, right? Like, Jason Zucker needs to be there. You know, I love the value of Jake Gensel in drafts. Curious to see what Sidney Crosby brings, Evgeny Malkin. But I just think, you know, you want to look from a stabilizing point of view. I just think there's clearly way more value in what Ilya Samsonov can bring to the table as opposed to Tristan Jarry here.
Well, it's funny because I was kind of scratching my head dating back to like 2016 or even earlier on those kind of GMJR moves. And you're like, how is this benefit the team at all. But then his record always seems to refute that. So credit there. But I do think one other huge storyline is going to be third pairs. Obviously, it's not going to turn the needle for you in fantasy this season. But the Penguins, I don't like their third pair with CeCe and Matheson right now. Matheson was a liability for the Panthers in the postseason. Obviously, he can score. He can score from the blue line, which is good. And CeCe, you know, I'm not going to comment there. But I think that's going to be a factor for them. And then when you have a guy like Tristan Jarry, who's going to need to be the guy, obviously Casey DeSmith behind him has some experience, but I don't think you're going to see that consistency from Jarry this season. I think we saw it last year because he knew that Matt Murray was there, a guy that won cups for them, you know, right there supporting him, kind of like the a la Braden Holtby situation, Nick. But I'm worried now about that Pittsburgh team. And you mentioned they got, you know, absolutely destroyed in the bubble. I'll give them a pass for that. It is funny though, because they played banged up in the regular season last year, but then had a healthy team in the postseason and looked absolutely terrible. So it's you know, probably throw that out the window, but I don't like what I've seen from their line combinations in training camp. I think that's the team that's going to draw the short end of the stick there in the East Division this season.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, that's exactly right. And I think specifically when it comes to goaltending, I just think in this day and age, more than any other, insulation is so vital. Like, that's why I like Montreal this season. I know they made moves up front, but you know, you bring in Jake Allen to be a stabilizing force, give the rest needed to a Carey Price, I think just boosts the value of a guy like Carey Price, right? I think you even, again, you can correlate the two in Washington. Craig Anderson's a pretty decent goalie, you know, better team in front of him. I wouldn't be shocked if he has a better season, but still I have my wonders. But I think you're so right when it comes to Pittsburgh. There's a lot of question marks, at least for me defensively. And Tristan Jarry being a number one goalie, like, the mentality of a goalie changes, guys, from, you know, I'm competing with Matt Murray for playing time to I'm the bona fide number one. How will you handle the pressure, especially in that division? That is the group of death, guys. Every game is going to be so vital. Every 2 points that's on the line is going to be huge. And that's my big curiosity with that division. It will be the survival of the fittest when it comes to net mining in that division.
And I saw in your draft kit, you did, you identified a couple of potential busts based on ADP. And one guy who stuck out on the list is Patrice Bergeron from the Bruins, who's in that same division, maybe could take a bit of a fall if he deals with an injury again, like he has in recent years, or if one or both of his line mates are just not 100%. And Marchand, who's expected to be ready for the start of the season now, but Pasternak, we still haven't heard a concrete update on him. So is that just more of a product of some of the things around him and his injury history and his ADP, or is there something more to that as to why you would fade Patrice Bergeron in a fantasy draft?
Yeah, firstly, Beast Nation is after me in droves right now on social media, but bring it. I'm ready for it. There's a variety of factors. And again, I should preface by saying it was more so for me, and the way I worded it in my list that I submitted to web user was players to avoid. And it suddenly turned into bust. Like, Patrice Bergeron's an absolute stud. So Bruins fans, you're listening out there, I love Patty Bergeron. The guy's a new captain, long time coming, huge fantasy point producer for me in the past. I love him. But I think you look at this year, you look at the trajectory, you look at the division they're in. I think, you know, to me at least, very subjective, I could see this team slipping a bit. You know, my question marks in between the pipes, how will it be received, handled when it comes to Tuukka Rask coming back, left the bubble. Zdeno Chara leaves. How much of an impact did he have on that team? Does Charlie McAvoy take that next step? Matt Grizzlick, is he a wild card in fantasy hockey? I think he is. But I think everything you just mentioned with the injury concerns, it sounds like Brad Marchand, as you mentioned, is going to start this season, which is great news from a fantasy focus. Not so much for David Pastrnak. And while it's not the be and end all that he's out and they can add somebody else to glue in, when those three are together, they're the most effective, right? So I think right away there's going to be a dip in production. Certainly when you don't have those three in line as opposed to two, it's going to be a bit different. It sounds like Jack Studnick is going to be on that line to start. So there's definitely some sleeper value there from DFS point of view. But again, to answer, there's just so many different factors as to why I wouldn't take Patrice Bergeron where he's being, you know, average, you know, in terms of being drafted right now, just because I don't think the value is there. Because ultimately, every time I make a decision to pick a player, I think about value first.
I agree. And I would say that I do have slight concern about Boston too. I think they're one of those teams that might have a little bit down of a regular season performance, but then when they're fully healthy in the postseason, watch out for that team, mm-hmm. no doubt about it. I do think though, from fantasy value, when I'm looking to draft this year, and Pete and I did our other mock draft the other day, I just felt myself being safe about teams like a Montreal who, even though I'm not exactly sure where Josh Anderson's going to plug in there, even though I'm not sure where Tyler Toffoli is skating right now, you know, guys like that, I still felt better about taking those guys in later rounds because of how deep Montreal is and just the security that they're always going to be in the conversation. Whereas Boston, you can make the argument that even second line right wing has always been a rotating door for them. Kasha needs to hold that spot mm-hmm. down, especially until Pastrnak comes back. And same thing with the power play for the Bruins. Look at what they lost with Torrey Krug. He was the best power play quarterback in the NHL for a number of years back there. And Charlie McAvoy, every time they gave him that opportunity to do the same thing, he couldn't do it. Exactly. I think McAvoy's a stud. He's a great player, great fantasy asset, but if he loses that spot out the gate to Grizzlick, that is going to be a roller coaster for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, and of course a lot of people have tunnel vision when you put out these rankings. They don't think about all those factors, guys. That's all I can pretty much add on the Boston front, because it was no slight on Patrice Bergeron, but I think everything you just mentioned as well, Rob, you have to take different factors into account. And I think you're so right, especially when it comes to Torrey Krug, right? Like, there's not many who can run a power play the way Torrey Krug can. And as you mentioned, you know, Charlie McAvoy hasn't, you know, shown that ability to take that next step and run a power play, at least in the National Hockey League. Matt Grizzlick wouldn't be shocked if he gets the first looks on PP1. There's just way more questions this year than there were in the past, if that makes sense, when it comes to Boston from a fantasy point of view.
Yeah, and center is such a deep position. I mean, yeah, you could say Bergeron exactly. is a top 10 center based on pedigree, but there are even some guys behind him that maybe have a higher point ceiling and a little bit more appealing. Bergeron's going around 40, 45 overall in Yahoo right now, which is pretty good value for him, honestly. But yeah, I hear some of the concerns. When you look at Nick, just to touch on some off-season moves and the impact of them, one that people are always on us about in our D ranks and overall ranks is that we have Shea Theodore too low. And we come back and say that, hey, Petrangelo's in the mix now. You know, it's going to be a point share. It's just going to be a balancing act. Could they be together on power play one? Sure. But that's not really something that teams do that much, having two defensemen on the first unit. So how do you see that playing out? Who do you have ranked higher between Theodore and Petrangelo? And do you think that Petrangelo will negatively impact Theodore, who was amazing in the playoffs?
You guys know how I feel about this, right? I've been pumping this guy for a while, and that's Shea Theodore. I've never really viewed, quite honestly, outside of a contract year, and we know we weight that differently. Like, Alex Petrangelo to me doesn't translate good enough for me to pin him as a stud defenseman. Like, he's a great all-round defenseman, one of the best in this league. But from a point production standpoint, other guys I would go to. This is just purely speculation in my opinion, but I think Theodore is going to get that crack on PP1. I just think you look at the numbers and what he's put together, and I've put this in my fantasy rankings since January 1st of 2020, 48 games played, 15 goals, 27 assists, 42 points in the last 48 games, and 16 power play points. How can you argue with that? And again, they're blessed with two stud defensemen easily. You know, you plop Petrangelo on PP2 and this way you give him a bit of a break, right? In the fact that he's going to be playing key shutdown minutes for this Vegas team. But any way you look at it, it's a good problem to have. But I think from a fantasy point of view, I'm certainly taking Shea Theodore well before Alex Petrangelo. How do you guys view it?
Well, I would take Petro. I think he's going to win the Norris this season. I think that team in Vegas, it's funny. We're talking about questions for every team here. And the only question we're asking about Vegas is whether it's going to be Shea Theodore or Petrangelo on the first power play. And quite honestly, I don't care. You know, these players are so good. They're going to be good no matter what. So for Vegas, that definitely assures them top two in the division based on our conversation here. But I would go Petro. I think category coverage is king in fantasy, especially in a condensed schedule. I would give him the edge there. I do think it'd be a great storyline though if Theodore does cement that spot. I know that's what they struggle with in their first season in the league. He couldn't stay up there. Then it a little shaky in the second season, but really in the postseason, turned that corner, finally looked like a great player on the power play. So I'd like to see that, but I would put my chips on Petro's side just because the big money contract, I think he's going to live up to that expectation. And for the first season, I do think he's going to win the Norris as a Vegas Golden Knight.
My other question for Vegas is who's going to center Stone and Pacioretty? Is it going to be Cody Glass, in which case you love him in keeper leagues, late in a standard league, stuff like that? But yeah, I mean, everybody's all over Colorado. Just, you know, Robbie, myself, Nick, I'm sure you're very high on them as well. But in terms of chances of winning the regular season division title, Vegas could certainly do it. They have a better goalie tandem. Not many have better than Colorado, but Vegas is one of them that has better. The defense maybe isn't as deep, but is just as strong after adding Petro. And then the forward group rolls three lines, just like the Avalanche will. So yeah, that's a wager. If people are super high on the Avalanche in the regular season and you're maybe wagering on the division winner, there's a little bit of value on Vegas.
Tons of value. And I think in general, guys, you look at that division, it's going to be a three-horse race. I like St. Louis quite a bit. I love the Mike Hoffman pickup in the top six, especially when it gets to the playoffs and we think that, you know, a guy like Tarasenko is going to be in the fold too. I think Robert Thomas takes another step forward this season. And I love contract year Jordan Binnington. In fact, I've touted him for the Vezina Trophy, if you can believe it. I just feel that strongly about this file, and we'll see what happens. I think to answer your Vegas question, a guy I took a flyer on late in my 14-team draft last night, Chandler Stephenson, could play on that top line with Pacioretty and Mark Stone. Those three, had pretty decent chemistry in the second half last year after Stephenson was picked up from the Washington Capitals. So I think that's certainly a player, if people are listening, that you want to take a flyer on, at least in DFS or early on in your league. Go ahead and do so, because there's tremendous value from that point of view. But I think those three teams, it's going to be an absolute dogfight to figure out not only who wins the conference or who wins, you know, top President's Trophy numbers, but also that division. I can't wait for that.
So World Juniors just wrapped up earlier this week. Three players.
Thanks for reminding me.
I wasn't. Hey, I didn't mention the result. None of that. Fair. You know, we're going to take that route. But three players, I think, to me, were absolutely dominant in every game they played. We'll go with Trevor Zegras, yep, Tim Stützle, and Dylan Cousins. I mean, these guys looked not only physically dominant, but talented out of anyone's expectations, beyond shattered them. So what now in fantasy, when you're drafting late rounds, you got to get a couple of these guys. How do you think you would order those, Nick? And I want to hear your thoughts too on that, Pete.
I think, Bobby, you want to weigh in first and chirp me for Canada?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Nick.
You go ahead. Yeah.
USA beat the best Canadian team ever. I said the same thing. All-time Canadian team ever. And what happened, Nick? What was that?
I turned it off. I didn't watch. I was watching the Raptors. No, I think you're right. It is what it is. Kudos to the States. I gave them their dues. And we move on to next year's tournament. To answer your question, I'll preface by saying I took Trevor Zegras yesterday after texting Adam Henrique that I was passing up on him and taking his boy Trevor Zegras. So I even put Zegras in a 14 jersey that Rico didn't like very much, but so be it. The way I play it out, I think the momentum could continue to build here for Zegras in the top six. It sounds like, at least in my opinion, he'll play with Ryan Getzlaf, and that's a pretty damn good player to play with, a future Hall of Famer in that top six. And if he continues to shine the way he has, sky's the limit. I love Stützle when it comes to the Ottawa Senators in that top six. I thought he was outstanding in that tournament, and I think the value will be there right away. I think every year there's rookies that, you know, people are bullish on and will take that leap of faith, but let's not forget it's a young man's game. So I will not be shocked at all if these guys have better seasons than we all expect, maybe even better ones than a guy like Lafreniere, just more so because they've played some quality hockey already in the last couple of weeks and have a head start over the competition going into this season. And Dylan Cousins, I think, is a massive wild card for me because, you know, I you know, the fight's real for me between Mittelstadt and Dylan Cousins, right? Mm-hmm. Mittelstadt's the forgotten one in Buffalo, was in the AHL last year, really hasn't clicked yet at the NHL level. He's in a contract year, by the way, so don't sleep on the name Casey Mittelstadt. I think maybe he finds his way a bit. And I think there could be a bit of turbulence along the way for Dylan Cousins. But, you know, as soon as I say that, you know, wouldn't be shocked as well if he slots into that top six. So I think there's legitimate value late in your drafts to take flyers, because if you see some of these names, you're like, might as well take a flyer on a Zegras or a Cousins or you know, a Stützle or a Byfield. Might as well. And if it doesn't work out, you move on and pluck somebody off waivers, right?
Yeah, and there are a ton of guys that are rookie eligible. I think our top 10 list is similar to yours, mm-hmm, in a little bit different order, but we're not, you know, all of us love these guys. And even if you go outside the top 10, you'll find names like, you know, from the Wild, Marco Rossi, yep, and and Kapokakinen, guys that have maybe the platform if the things break in their direction to make an immediate fantasy impact. Denisenko is another one in Florida. Yep. If he lands in the top six, there's a long list of skaters, and not just defensemen like last year. It's mostly forwards this year. And then the two goalies, or two or three goalies, between Shesterkin, Sorokin, and Kapokakinen. But there's a good chance that we see four, five, six guys outperform the top point producers on a per game prorated basis compared to last year, when pretty much it was Kubalik and then the rest, nobody had more than 20 goals. Kubalik had 30 for Chicago, but it was kind of a weak year for rookie forwards. So maybe this is the year to look at rookie forwards, and other people might be sleeping on them after the disappointments from last year. And then all of a sudden they start scoring in droves.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned Lafreniere, Nick, maybe having a little slight disadvantage now not playing in that tournament. Obviously, I mean, look at Kirby Doc and pros and cons. But yeah. I think you make a good point because Zegras now is battle tested. I mean, he was playing 20 minutes a night on Team USA. Stutzla was too. I mean, Stutzla played like 25 minutes one game. He was throwing the body. He was throwing guys into the bench. Okay, so this kid is physical too. And I think those two guys specifically have a major advantage this season because lineup placement number one, you mentioned Getzlaf and Zegras. That's fantastic. And the Ducks, they've got great prospects at every position, basically. So I think they could make a little bit of noise, get out of the bottom dweller conversation this year, and maybe position themselves for the future. But then for Stutzla too, I mean, you know that he's in the top six guaranteed. You know that. For Lafreniere, unfortunately, same thing we kind of saw with Kako last year. David Quinn does seem to be playing favorites here with the veterans, which is fine. I support that. If you're trying to win, I get doing that. But it looks like Lafreniere has been on line three all training camp so far with Filippito. And I just don't think the value is necessarily going to be there unless you can guarantee to me that he's going to be in the top six at 5-on-5, which I need. And then the first power play would be a bonus with a cherry on top, obviously. But I would want my rookie skater to be in a top six role, and Zegras and Stutzla look to have that almost guaranteed now.
And I would throw a couple other names as well, you know, combining with the conversation about Pierre-Luc Dubois. Is he long for, you know, time in Columbus? Is he going elsewhere? Some foodie for thought. And Liam Foodie, I think a guy could slot in the top six if Dubois goes elsewhere. Watch out for him. And another guy's a, you know, a deep, deep sleeper for me is Ty Smith, the New Jersey Devils, right? I think we saw shades of that in last year's training camp. We saw it in junior, what he's done before. I think there's some sneaky value, and we'll see how he's utilized, especially for a Devils team we think is going to be a cellar dweller in this league. I think every year, guys, there's always a couple, you know, rookie defensemen that sort of come out of nowhere, run the power play. Who knows what's going to happen with PK Subban? Does he have a bounce back year? I think there's opportunity. That's what you're looking for when you look at some of these younger players. And that's why I think you make a really good point to piggyback off what you said. The opportunity for Lafreniere won't be there as much as we think, just because of all the depth the New York Rangers have in that top six. We think Kako is going to be better. Panarin's there as a bandage ad. Ryan Strome, what to expect from him. So that's why I think you have to temper your expectations a tad, I would say, by Alexi Lafreniere. And then conversely, again, you know, Buffalo's a retooling team, and Trevor Zegras. I think there's just so much ice to be had there in Anaheim, and those are certainly big factors for me.
Yeah, you mentioned the Devils. I think if you're digging that deep, I don't know that it's going to work out for you in fantasy.
Yeah,
maybe you're just playing somebody off the waiver wire, like exactly. Subban gets going. They did sign Sammy Vatanen yesterday, which kind of tells me that maybe they didn't trust the other batch of players between, you know, not necessarily Smith, who's a defenseman prospect, but they have Severson. They've had him forever. It feels like Subban was a big disappointment. They get Vatanen back after trading him to Carolina, and then he comes back. So they clearly won that trade. They got him back anyway. So, and he could be a decent producer, like we slotted him in, right, Robbie, by Kevin Shattenkirk and players of that caliber among the defenseman point projections. So go check that out, nhl.com/fantasy. It's updated.
Yeah, and I was just going to add too on Vatanen. I just think that was a nice, tidy piece of work by Tom Fitzgerald, the GM of the New Jersey Devils, because A, you get him at $2 million. It's a 1-year contract. You want to flip him again? Do it again, right? I think you look at the value they got, excellent value. And I think especially in, you know, this flat cap era, right? I think teams want to take on as little money as possible. I think having a guy at $2 million and, you know, trading him halfway through the year, you're looking prorated maybe about $1 million. There'll be a lot more teams interested in a Sammy Vatanen this time around because his contract is so low. So I think a nice job by the New Jersey Devils there.
Well, before we let you go, Nick, it wouldn't be a show with you if we didn't talk contract years specifically for the UFA guys. Now, this one's interesting because we have names like Ovechkin, Landeskog, Hall, you know, some guys that have already gotten big deals, right? Yeah. But I just want to throw this out there before we get it going. The reason why contract years are important for fantasy players, if you're new to fantasy, these guys are playing for their livelihoods and they want to go extra hard motivation to make that happen in the off season. So Nick, any one of those big names stand out to you for UFA contract years in fantasy?
Yeah. The contract year phenomenon, you know, guys, I put a lot of weight into this in my fantasy rankings. I think ultimately it's going through the crease this year. Freddie Anderson, and it lines up perfectly with my thoughts on the North Division. I think Toronto is one of the better teams in that division. I think there'll be value in Freddie Anderson potentially having one of his best seasons of his career. I think it's lined up perfectly for him. Jordan Binnington's another guy with the St. Louis Blues. There's a significant drop off, we can say nicely, in that division between St. Louis, Vegas, and Colorado and everybody else, right? So I like what Binnington brings to the table there. And I think we're all bullish on contract year Dougie Hamilton. I think you just look at the numbers, and this is why I could easily evolve him in a conversation as an elite fantasy defenseman. Last year, 47 regular season games, he had 14 goals and 40 points. That's Brent Burns numbers from a couple of years ago, and maybe even better, right? Like, I think you have to sniff around that value, especially where he's going in drafts. So I like him quite a bit. I think looking down my list to an extent, Kyle Palmieri is another intriguing name because I think he likely goes at the deadline if he doesn't re-sign with the New Jersey Devils. And he's already a guy coming off a season with 25 goals in 65 games. He's, you know, he's had a bunch of string of seasons where he's scored 20 plus goals. And I think he's just going to even be better from a fantasy perspective if he goes to a better team here. And we'll see if that happens. And then the last name I wanted to bring up was Philip Grubauer, right? I think you guys have talked about this almost ad nauseum over the last couple months prepping for this season. I think it's fair to say that Philip Grubauer, in a normal occurrence where this guy wasn't hurt every third game, I think he's injured right now or something's up with him. If he wasn't hurt all the time, he'd be a guy who could easily be in the top 50, right? I think you look at the team, you look at the pedigree, you look at the potential, everything is there, but it's really, really concerning. And I still have to take a flyer from a contract your point of view, because he is Philip Grubauer, because it is a contract year, and because he is on arguably the best team pound for pound, at least for the President's Trophy conversation, in the Colorado Avalanche. But I'm scared as hell. I own him in a keeper league and I'm scared. You know, I picked him up in a trade. I'm like, this guy's going to get hurt or something's going to happen really, really early on. But I just think there's value there, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think that Grubauer is a great pick. You can get him among the top 10 goalies. People are a little wary on him just because of the injury history. He's never really taken a full grasp on that number one job. But this is the year that the Avs have such a strong defense in front of him. And I think that, like, you're what we saw from him in the playoffs 2 years ago, and you know, obviously got injured last year in the playoffs. But this is the year that the Avs can put it all together and get past the second round. You know, knock off Vegas maybe in the second round, and then the sky's the limit for them.
We're going to get out of here in a minute. Brian Boucher on with Dan Rosen, Sean Rourke at the rink. Very, 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 very concerned about the Avalanche goaltending. Mm. They're unproven. He's not so sure about Grubauer. And listen, he's saying the bottom line is this. If anything's going to hold that team back, it's the goaltending. I think we're all interested to see how it plays out. Not saying they're going to be both awful. I'm not saying that, but that's the element that's going to hold that team back because they are loaded everywhere else. Put a bow on it, wrap it up.
Well, maybe that's makes Vegas a good pick to win the division then. I like that. I like that take. I didn't really think that. I thought that last year about Colorado, I wasn't thinking that much this year. I didn't have as many concerns about Grubauer and Francois because they were battle tested last year, but I hear you guys. So catch us on Twitter. I'm at NHL Reese, Golden Muzzy for Nick, at NHL Jensen for Petey, and Aircheck for Bob. Same handles on Instagram if you want to get us there too.
Hey, Nikki, thanks for popping on today, buddy. Appreciate it. You really brought it today too.
I always bring it, guys. You know I'm an absolute gamer. Appreciate your time here and enjoy Puck Drop next week. I can't wait, guys.
Yeah, definitely check out Nick's rankings, draft kit. You can find it all at Sportsnet and check him out on all his other platforms at the Golden Muzzy on Twitter. So, guys, great to be with you again. We'll be back for our season preview, the last one, with the best bets with Michael Leboff on Monday. So stay tuned for that. Have a great weekend. Good luck in your fantasy drafts. Hit us up. Signing off, NHL Fantasy on Ice.